morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Steiner here on Liberation Station Radio Show, August 7th, 2022. Thanks for joining in. Have a lot of news to cover. It's going to start out with a clip from Dr. McCullough interviewing Dr. Robert Malone recently. And also, I should mention, you can join us on the listen/archives page over at theliberationstation.com for the chat room. That's theliberationstation.com for the chat room. Facebook Live is not going again this week, unfortunately. I am recording it, so it'll be posted right after the show over at facebook.com/wearechangedtampa. And then a few seconds later, it'll be over at the Republic Broadcasting page, facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. Unfortunately, the computer that was running Facebook was all ready to go. I tested it this morning, and it decided to shut down all on its own. Last week, you may remember, I couldn't do the live stream because Facebook repeatedly was not allowing me to on the usual page I posted on facebook.com/wearechangedtampa. And then I could go over to another page I host, the Mad as Hell Network page, and I was able to consistently stream live there. No warning, no kind of error message, just an inability to stream and the spinning wheel of Facebook. So not sure what's going on, and do some more experimentation to try to rule out any issues, technical issues that I might be causing, and see what other security issues might need to be addressed. But I think there might be some outside interference. So unfortunately, folks, we're not streaming live today, but the video of the clips, the illustrations, the charts, graphs, anything else will be up on the screen. Unfortunately, you can't follow live, like I say. So when I say that it's on screen, it will be on the recording. And your calls are welcome here at 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And toll free 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. And we'll start out with this clip of, as I mentioned, Dr. Robert Malone being interviewed by Dr. Joseph McCullough. Not to be confused with McCullough, as in Peter McCullough. This is Dr. Peter McCullough, and Dr. Joseph McCullough are two different individuals, and McCullough.com is his site. This video is up on BitChute. I was able to track down, entitled "mRNA Platform Inventor Sifts Through the Lies," interview with Dr. Robert Malone and Dr. McCullough, posted July 20th, 2022. And give me just a moment. I'll get it queued up here to synchronize with the network audio over Republic Broadcasting. And once I ask you to play that mic in the control room, Mike is sitting in today, making it sound so good, then I will be ready to play at the exact same moment and synchronize it with the video on the screen. Now then, and this comes from a Children's Health Defense article. I learned of this video. It's from childrenshealthdefense.org, the Defender magazine. So you go to childrenshealthdefense.org/defender for all their latest. It's entitled "Dr. Robert Malone, quote, gaslighted, ridiculed, defamed," end quote, but not discredited. And he's going to go into why some folks might think that he's a double agent, and some misinformation that he's been fed, and he's no longer associating with Mike Callahan, he's mentioned in this interview. So we're just going to play this. We'll see how long we have to play this, maybe 20, 30 minutes at most. The interview is an hour and 43 minutes, so we don't certainly have enough time for that. So I've tried to pick out the best that I could for this interview. And let's see, I have it ready to go here, Mike, in the control room. So whenever you're ready, you can play that clip, please.
the concerns I think are refuted by my behaviors and actions. Let's start with the inventorship. I have many patents. I've contributed to the development of many technologies. My wife and I helped found Innovium, the electroporation or pulsed electrical field gene delivery company that is promoting its own vaccine technology, which is a DNA-based platform and could well be adapted to RNA-based vaccines. I certainly have those nine initial issued patents and others that relate to virtually any delivery system used to administer polynucleotides to the nasopharynx, to mucosal tissues, to elicit a mucosal immune response, which, as you know, is the huge benefit of Omicron natural infection, is that it produces a mucosal immune response in the infected individuals that's highly protective. I have many patents on various catalytic lipids, these positively charged fats that are used to deliver the polynucleotides. But I'm also an objective scientist, and as a consequence of the decades of experience in basic discovery research in this area, we've turned away from this technology because we could never overcome the inflammatory problems. This acute immune response and the recruitment of inflammatory cells into the injected tissues. We ran into this again and again and again, both in mice and then in monkeys, and could never overcome it. We abandoned the technology, and then Katie Carrico called me up in the mid-90s and wanted some advice, and I told her about the problems with the RNA and the problems with the inflammatory response. And together with Drew Weissman, she applied the pseudouridine discoveries that were just emerging and put pseudouridine all the way through the RNA, which is both immunosuppressive and increases the half-life of the RNA, so that these RNAs that are now being used are really nothing like the natural RNA. They're synthetic product. And this is the basis for their assertion that they're the true inventors and I am not, despite all the prior art and multiple patents, is that they made this improvement on the art that was enabling. The CureVac technology demonstrates that that's not enabling, that in fact you can get good immune responses with mRNA that does not include pseudouridine. But I had turned away from the tech. There was better ways to provide an immune response, I believed. Those are still investigational. And I have intimate understanding of the good, the bad, and the ugly of this approach and this technology. And that's always been my position, is that of an objective scientist. So I don't, and then on the last point on this, I never received substantial revenue of any kind from my inventions. The patents were filed from a company that's now defunct called Vicalc, that had partnered with Merck years ago. Over $1 billion were spent to advance the technology. Merck and Vicalc only focused on the DNA, and they failed. But as a consequence of the terms of my employment, I received, in addition to my technician salary, which was about $20,000 a year, I received $1 for all those patents. I've had no patent royalty. So for me, I have no financial conflict of interest here. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. What matters is integrity and honesty and truthfulness. Now, about the two jabs, I knew that I was going to have to travel internationally and that in the absence of vaccination, that was going to be almost impossible. That has been validated. The fact that I've been able to travel internationally and speak out internationally, initially at the International COVID Summit in Rome, has been crucial, both for my own comprehension and insights into the fact that this coordinated campaign that we've all been experiencing, including the propaganda, censorship, etc., physicians such as yourself, is a global campaign, and it has used the same exact language and strategies. I don't know if you knew, I'm not so honored as you, as to have been identified by the White House as one of the Dirty Dozen, but I was identified by the Italian press as one of the Dirty Dozen because I went to the summit in Rome, although they only managed to come up with 10 pictures. So I guess in Italy, 10 constitutes a dozen. But it has been fascinating in my travels through Europe and down into the Iberian Peninsula to learn from first-person accounts that the same exact strategies that have been deployed in the United States have been deployed all over Europe, Latin America, and Africa to some extent. So I think it was important that I took that sack. I took the jabs. In addition to my need for travel, I was suffering from long COVID. I was one of the initial wave of infected with Wuhan 1 because I went to a drug discovery computational conference in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and was infected in the end of February with the original strain as part of that initial outbreak there at a time when the virus was still believed to not be on the East Coast. And Wuhan 1 hit me hard. I had long COVID, and there was a lot of buzz in the press, which has not been substantiated by the literature subsequently, that vaccination would address and mitigate the symptoms of long COVID. So for those two reasons, I took the jab, need to travel, suffering long COVID. And there, I thought, as an immunologist, there was some logic to the idea that an additional boost of antigen might rev up my immune response and help quench the long COVID symptoms that I was experiencing. And at the time, remember, long COVID was another obscure censored community, the people that believed they were suffering from this. And we were censored within that community and defamed and denied and gaslighted. Since then, it's become a major focus area and acknowledged by the CDC and the NIH. But at the time, it was another one of those things that was many of us were experiencing, but most of the world was denying existed, and we were considered crazy. So I took the jab, and it turned out that it actually made things worse, particularly after the second dose, when I developed hypertension with a systolic of up to 230. Ooh. And pulse pushing 90 fairly frequently, sometimes up to 100. And so I had the cardiac damage. I also had narcolepsy, other central nervous brain fog, a restless leg, a number of symptoms that are known to be associated with the vaccine. And then out came the How Bad Is My Batch website when Jessica Rose and many others analyzed the bears data by lot number. And Jill and I did a search and it found out that my second jab was from one of those highly lethal, high risk lot numbers. And so that's that. We all make mistakes. I think that the fact that what I found in traveling is that having made that mistake of accepting that vaccine, which I acknowledge now was absolutely not the proper way to approach this. And by the way, I eventually did get my long COVID cured by a physician who has since had her license pulled, Meryl Nass.
Meryl Nass, yeah.
Because she prescribed ivermectin for me, and I had almost immediate relief in symptoms, and suddenly a burst in stamina. I was able to out-hike my 20-something second child when we were visiting the West Coast along the Big Sur, which was a huge surprise for me. So tip of the hat to Meryl Nass, a true truth warrior and another inspirational figure in all of this, I think, for all of us. So that's the brief history on that. Now, let's talk about the third leg on this stool of the logic of me as controlled opposition. There is no question. I have co-published. I used to be a business partner with a CIA agent who was retired from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, where he had had a senior position. I have co-published with a CIA agent who I believe is, according to the attack journalist that the New York Times sent for me, is no longer with the CIA, but who was in Wuhan in the fourth quarter of 2019, who is our arguably our leading expert in gain-of-function research and bioweaponry, Michael Callahan, who called me from Wuhan on January 4th and told me to get my team spun up to address this novel virus, coronavirus, that was causing an outbreak in China. Very strange timing. And I had a series of interactions with him subsequently until I became completely disillusioned and aware that he was lying to me almost constantly, including about things like whether or not the pathogen was engineered. So I think that I can certainly empathize and understand why some might have these concerns. And I've certainly been subjected to plenty of attacks. I think some people weaponize this and use hyperbole to advance their own cause and raise money. But that's, as you know, that's been the experience of both of us and many through this outbreak, is there are some that will act in an unscrupulous fashion that's counterproductive to the overall cause of truth and integrity. But it's just the nature of things. I stand by, you know, I don't ask people to accept what I say. I ask people to think for themselves. And I've tried to be truthful, honest, act with integrity, provide access to information, try to help people to think through things by themselves. And I've made a number of predictions and comments and analyses that, like you, I stand by what I've said. And so even if I was controlled opposition, that's kind of irrelevant. The question is not who I am. The question is, what is the information? Is it useful to you? Is it helping you to manage your own affairs, make informed choices about vaccinating your children? And if so, I think that even if I was taking the position of these individuals, even if I was controlled opposition, I suspect that I'm fairly useful controlled opposition for those of us that are in this boat together of seeking truth. And frankly, all of my contacts with the government now are destroyed. The colleagues that I used to communicate with regularly at the FDA will no longer take my call. My former clients at Defense Threat Reduction Agency, I don't have any contacts with them anymore. I've dropped my contract with Defense Threat Reduction Agency. Largely, I just became disillusioned with them, particularly after I found out that another branch of DITRA is continuing to support the Wuhan Institute of Virology and disclose that. I shared a number of fragments of information about what I know that's been going on within DITRA, as well as within NIAID and the NIH. In doing so, I compromised that part of my career. I've thrown away, for the second time, by the way, a big career path that I've developed over decades. The first time was when I spoke out to the press about the Jesse Gelsinger tragedy and the abuse of Jim Wilson and the University of Pennsylvania that caused that unfortunate death. And that pretty much ended my career as a gene therapy researcher, academic. And now I've done it again in the case of these vaccines with these close, longstanding working relationships I've developed over decades with the biodefense enterprise. And so now I find myself in this odd position of being a truth teller, heretic, and leader of the opposition to what I believe to be egregiously bad conduct on the part of key players in my former industry of clinical research and regulatory affairs and vaccines, biodefense, and medical product development. That's my big beef here, is my whole career, all the time I've invested, all the training, all the effort, I'm seeing and largely have seen now the delegitimization of the vaccine enterprise, the delegitimization of the integrity of the CDC, the FDA, and the whole regulatory pathway that's been developed over generations now that I've been so deeply trained in. They've destroyed my industry. For what? So in sum, I respect the rights of others to have their own opinions. And I ask that you judge me fairly. I don't deny that we all get judged. And I also get criticized because I voted historically for Democrats. And Steve Bannon has forgiven me, so I guess maybe your listeners can also. I think what's important is that, let me put it this way, Dr. McCullough, and I'm sure you've been a truth warrior for far longer than I have, but the expression, I was in a dark room, I backed into the light switch, and what I saw was such that I could never unsee it. I think, like a lot of us, there's a huge laundry list. Bobby is an example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bobby now has common cause with Republican attorney generals all over the United States, and is increasingly alienated, in many cases radically alienated, from his traditional family's party. I think Mickey Willis is a fantastic example. The gentleman who I think we all is another one that we should all acknowledge the vindication of Plandemic and the thesis behind Plandemic, the series that he put out that had over a billion views. And Plandemic 3 is about to come out. Not everything there is right. Not everything Judy said was correct. But it was incredibly brave to put out the thesis and highlight the fact that there is this history of planning and machinations which precede all that we've experienced. And Mickey was basically run out of his former home, was burned, and he was run out of the Ojai Valley, now lives in Austin with his production team, has created his own little paradise now. And now I understand that there's many in the Ojai Valley that regret what they did to him. But the damage is done. Those of us that have been through this are never going back. And I suspect you're one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for the long and detailed explanation. And to support that narrative, the summary of what you just said, I think one of the most credible answers is to look at the information you're putting out. And I know you're not going to toot your own horn, but I will for you. When you announced that you were going on Getter and Joe Rogan's podcast last year because Twitter had banned you, as they have so many others of us, I jumped on that immediately. I want you to know that I follow no one on social media. That's largely an artifact of the fact that I do not use a cell phone. I just am pretty much, unless I'm traveling, I don't have another alternative, then I use it as a hotspot. But your Getter account is, in my view, the number one source of information about the updates on this craziness that's happening. I don't know how you're able to do it, but if you are not, if you're watching this and you are not accessing Dr. Malone's information on Getter, you are missing the big picture. I don't use it on my cell phone. I just keep the tab open on my desktop, and I refresh it every day or twice a day or three times a day to look at what he's posting, because what he's posting is extraordinary. I mean, it's up to date. Our content delivery system doesn't allow the flexibility that it does with social media account. And we have very limited social media reach and distribution because of what the media has done. The legacy media or social media platforms, but your content is beyond extraordinary. And I couldn't encourage people more to look at that. Now I'll repeat that.
That's again. Very kind. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sure Steve Bannon will appreciate that also as a,
you put a lot of Steve's content out there. Sure.
Well, by way of conflict of interest, I don't hold any shares in Getter, but Steve does.
Okay. Did not know that. Yeah, but yeah. It's extraordinary what you and your wife. I there's no way you could do that as one person. I suspect you have some help from your wife and maybe others.
Thanks for that. We also now have the Malone Institute, so that's MaloneInstitute.org, and we're putting up our World Economic Forum stuff, our WEF. We have a comprehensive table spreadsheet of all of the young leaders that have been trained over the years. And who they are, where they are, when they got trained, what their backgrounds are, all that kind of stuff. So that's another resource. And then the Substack, just like you use Substack, Substack has turned out to be an amazing vehicle. And as you'll recall, there was a strong attempt to deplatform the likes of you and I off of Substack.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to have failed, I think probably in part because we're making money for Substack. So that's rwmalonemd.substack.com. That's where our deeper thought pieces are. And you don't have to pay. It's optional. What we do, so you can have a free subscription. It'll just come into your email. But what we do is restrict the comments to just the paying subscribers. And what that does is it cuts out the trollery.
Ah, yes. Beautiful.
And so the truth is that I have so let me just expand on this a little bit. Tucker Carlson is another one of your colleagues that down there, down way down south.
Naples, I think.
Yeah, does not use, and what a nice guy. He's another, I'm honored to consider him a friend now.
Dr. Robert Malone being interviewed by Dr. Joseph Mercola. You're listening to Liberation Station Radio Show. Chris Steiner here with you. The site is around liberationstation.com.
We are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer. 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly, and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tune in Saturday mornings, 8 to 10 Central, to the Alternative Media with your host, Barron. If you've not been listening, this is some of what you've been missing.
2,000 mules, like you like to say occasionally, Farron, in your face.
They might have a set of lactating mammaries available that could provide milk for their adopted children.
Listen, news media, all pulling off this gigantic fraud.
Rhino, neocon, cucks.
There's this wonderful thing that's called Vote With Your Feet. Move to California.
I am a conspiracy factualist, and everyone else is a reality theorist.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of ships came out of nowhere.
Give me liberty, or let's give you death.
Any excuse to go in and kill yourself for this fraud of a government. This goes back 100 years.
When they come for your gold, give them a lead, and when they come for your guns, give them the bullets first. And
welcome to the revolution. All the walls are breaking down. It's time you had a taste of losing. Time the tables turn around. I see a glimpse of a recognition, but it's too little, it's too late. And what you thought was your best decision just became your worst mistake.
And we're back here, Liberation Station Radio Show. Chris Steiner with you. The site is theliberationstation.com. We're going to continue with a bit more of the clip. Can't play the entire interview. Dr. Mercola interviewing Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Joseph Mercola interviewing Dr. Robert Malone is posted July 20th, 2022. And he's already said quite a bit of the meat of what I wanted to put out there. That a lot of the hopeful facts in the history of COVID and Dr. Malone's gullibility that he's confessed to, which is great that you just heard that in the last segment, that some doctors can be very, can redeem themselves by admitting their mistakes, and some doctors make the worst patients. So I'm glad to see Dr. Malone is trying to warn folks about his malignant hypertension, as he mentioned, and other issues that he got from the 2 shots, which he did not mention. Those were Moderna shots, by the way. And we'll continue with the interview now. Mike, in the control room, whenever you're ready, we'll continue playing that clip.
Another truth warrior, really, even though he doesn't wear socks. You know, the experiences we've all had have been amazing going through this. But Tucker also doesn't use social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a long chat with him about this. The long form interview we did is about an hour, but I think we talked for about 3.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the social media is a 2-way communication, very much. I receive all kinds of information in learning and feedback on a hourly or daily basis. And all of that goes back in to the content. Mm-hmm. Many of the links that we post come from people that are sharing information from all over the world with us now, consequent to our travel. So, for instance, a lot of the very interesting literature coming out of the Netherlands right now with the Dutch farmers' protest, information coming out of concerning the Ukraine conflict that has been suppressed by the corporate media, and that I get. It's not always right, but I think it's important to share these alternative voices, as we've all learned how egregious the propaganda and censorship has been, and the collusion between the administrative state and the intelligence community and the media has become so apparent. We have to seek ways to provide free media, alternative media, and I'm grateful that Getter provides a relatively clean interface. It's not free of trolls, but it's certainly a heck of a lot better than Twitter. And Substack, without Substack, I think that our access to information here in the United States would be even further compromised. There's Matt Taibbi, there's Glenn Grenwald, there's so many fantastic new citizen journalists that are coming up.
Steve Kirsch.
Steve, of course, yes.
Alex Berenson, so they're all out there.
Well, I got a little bit of a bone to pick with Alex.
I know. But he's still out there. I mean, he's actually right ahead of me in the the popular popularity poll. But
thanks for the shout out.
I cannot believe what he did to you, Chris. My impression of him radically changed once he did that. I mean, in real time, I think you were on the same show. It was a Fox News broadcast, I believe.
And yeah, it was a sub for Laura, and it was another one of those cases where I was actually phoning in from Spain, so it was about 3 a.m. And I was a bit groggy. I was parked in a little side part of the apartment we were staying in, just barely keeping my eyes open, managed to jam a cup of coffee. And then this attack came at me, and I was like, whoa, what to do about this? But I guess I did okay at the moment, but it was pretty egregious and absolutely not appreciated, and I think counterproductive.
I agree. So, with your original response to the controlled opposition question, there was two questions I had. One was, you had mentioned that one of the researchers developed the pseudouridine, which allowed the vaccine to, or the jab to be produced. But did the introduction or the integration of the pseudouridine or your pseudouricell into the mRNA vaccine, did that address the inflammatory issue that you had observed in your earlier research? And then the second question is that you had a hot lot. In my discussion with Ryan Cole, he made me aware of the fact that these COVID jabs are not homogeneous in any way, shape, or form, and that they're initially designed, of course, to produce the mRNA provide the mRNA with the instruction set to generate this sort of bastardized spike protein. But that is maybe less than half the messenger RNA in there, because the purification technology is apparently so inadequate that it seems about a half or more of the actual mRNA are actually fragments that still get translated into proteins. And who knows what the heck they're doing. So do you think that the hot lead has something to do with that, or is it just a pure homogenization issue and maybe you got a higher concentration or higher amount of the mRNA? So two questions for you.
Let's see. Now I forgot about the first one.
The first one was, that did the pseudouracil itself change the reduce the inflammatory reactions that you observe.
Okay, so let's dive into the whole formulation, lot consistency, and pseudouridine story.
Yeah.
The science behind the role of pseudouridine in RNA is still evolving. And this is over a decade after Carrico and Weissman had their finding. At the time, and it's useful just to give a jab, remember Katie Carrico used to be a Hungarian spy, and Drew Weissman was a Tony Fauci postdoc. So just to set the stage a little bit, Katie had come over to the United States and got a not really a faculty position, more like a soft money, hang out in the lab and do stuff kind of a job at Penn, and was working together with Drew. And she called me, and I told her about some of the problems with the RNA, and the two of them somehow came up, and it may have been her, with the recognition that there was emerging information in the literature that the inclusion of pseudouridine, which is a modified natural base, a part of the AUGC, it's the U in RNA, which is naturally modified in the cell in specific places in a highly regulated fashion. And we now know influences things like RNA stability, RNA folding, RNA processing and splicing. It's highly regulated. But that wasn't known at the time. What was known was that there was some early papers suggesting that if RNAs include pseudouridine, they will last longer and be less inflammatory or suppress immune responses against cells that had pseudouridine modified mRNA in them. Okay, so on the basis of that, they worked together and incorporated pseudouridine throughout the entire mRNA molecules that were synthesized using the methods that I had originally developed and then purified. And they found that when they injected those, they got a better adaptive immune response and less of the inflammatory response. Now, it was never really clear why that was happening at the time when they filed their patents and subsequently. And now we have some both advances in the science of pseudouridine that are considerable. And the big breakthrough was this Cell paper that was published from a group at Stanford, I think in February of this year, February or March, in which they did needle biopsies. So this is the stuff that should have been done before any of this was released out to the public using animal models. But the group did fine needle aspiration of draining lymph nodes in the axilla, so underneath your arm, on the same side as where the injection had been given into the deltoid. And they detected the RNA persisting in those lymph nodes for at least 60 days. They didn't test beyond that. And the levels of spike protein produced were far higher and for far longer, up to 60 days. Again, they didn't test beyond that in the blood than are produced by the natural infection. So what we now know in sum from all of this is that, yes, pseudouridine can cause RNA to behave in ways that is absolutely not like natural RNA, as I had originally proposed, that being that the RNA is typically degraded within a couple of hours, so that if people did have adverse events, the inciting molecule would be gone, and physicians could elect not to readminister it. But in the current formulation with the pseudouridine incorporated throughout the entire backbone of the RNA, which is something that has never happens in situ in a natural situation, these are not natural RNAs, they do suppress the acute inflammatory response, but they also seem to suppress overall adaptive immune responses or immune function. This may be something that's contributing to the immunosuppression that's observed. after dosing with these products. That's unresolved, but there's no question that that adverse event exists, the immunosuppression, nonspecific immunosuppression. So we have now, with the pseudouridine modified RNAs, lots of evidence that the discovery of Carrico and Weissman had negative aspects to it, which were not well characterized by Pfizer, Moderna, BioNTech, etc. The company CureVac elected not to use the pseudouridine technology, and their COVID vaccine actually was, in retrospect, remarkably immunogenic. Perhaps they suffered from too much integrity from a business standpoint. They used a lower dose, and in their trials, it was not detected as being as immunogenic and effective as the Pfizer and Moderna products, which had the pseudouridine. But in retrospect, that could probably be largely attributed to the fact that they used a significant lower dose because they were afraid of the adverse events. So in many ways, in my opinion, CureVac was actually much more responsible, and they did approach the whole situation using the technology that I had proposed years ago, and it appears to have been remarkably effective, in my opinion, and I look forward to that company being able to recover. There may still be some indications for the utility of the original form of the invention. Time will tell. We have to remember that mice and monkeys aren't humans.
Right.
But that responsible drug and pharmaceutical development may lead us to something eventually. I'm less sanguine that we're going to cure cancer with this than the CEOs of Pfizer and Moderna are. I think that the problem with cancer is a lot bigger than just coming up with a better way to deliver a polynucleotide. In terms of the batch and lot consistency, one of the things that's come out is the contract terms that these companies have been able to negotiate with world leaders, which I believe to be particularly egregious, typically include terms which restrict the national regulatory authorities from their normal practice of independent assessment of lot consistency, purity, identity, and potency. In other words, normally in a manufacturing system, when a company manufactures a product and ships it to the consumer, the regulatory agency will either directly or through some surrogate independently verify that the lots are being produced in a consistent fashion, have high quality lot consistency studies, have good quality assurance and quality control processes in place. And apparently the contract terms that have been negotiated not only absolve them from any liability, but absolve them from regulatory agency oversight at virtually every country where they're being manufactured or distributed. And these are extremely complex formulation processes. And the fundamentals of the nature of these products are that they are susceptible to aggregation. By the way, that's why the polyethylene glycol is in there, is to keep these lipid nanoparticles from aggregating. It's not there for stealth liposome purposes. And Naomi Wolf is a little off track with some of the things she said about it also. She really doesn't seem to understand the science. But that's what the PEG is there for, is to keep these things from aggregating. And yet they still do aggregate.
I thought the PEG was integrated as part of the nanoliposome.
It is. It has. So I'm going to talk science-y talk for a moment. It has unusually short acyl side chains compared to the way it's deployed in things like Doxil. for stealth liposome purposes. And I spoke about this directly with a group in British Columbia who I've known for decades that developed the tech very early on. And I'm not just saying this, I'm not inferring it. I spoke to the guy that invented it, and I asked, why did you put the peg in there? Did you do it to avoid clearance of the particles? He said, absolutely not. That's why we use the short acyl side chains. So the peg sticks into the lipid nanoparticles in the bottle, but it's rapidly displaced, and it gets knocked out of these things when you put them in the presence of serum proteins and the normal environment after injection. Because otherwise, if you had these little particles covered with peg after administration, they wouldn't fuse with cells. They wouldn't work.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of that, but that's part of the reason why, for instance, when I got my jab, I could almost immediately feel an odd sensation in my fingertips, which is very unusual. Many of us have hyperimmune responses or other short-acting adverse events or sensations associated with polyethylene glycol injection. And the fact that you have these anaphylactic responses to PEG after administration may partially be as a consequence of the fact that it's falling off of the particles right away and going into your blood.
Makes sense.
So a lot of things about this that are really deep and kind of complex about the aggregation of the particles, the mechanism by which they interact with cell membranes. Now we have the knowledge that there appear to be gaining entrance into the body. We know that the spike protein isn't just being processed or displayed on cell surface, but becomes associated with mitochondria and is toxic to mitochondrial function, which may underlie a lot of the loss of energy and other sensations that people have. Ryan has done a recent workup of some vials that were expired, so they're not really fully representative. But he does apparently find under the scope plate-like objects. They're still, and this is what's been termed the nano razor blades. Hard to say how they are deriving. The nature of these formulations is such that they're very susceptible to all kinds of the very complex aggregation phenomena that apparently are not being well characterized, have not been published, have not been publicized, and are denied. Nevertheless, there they are under the microscope. Whether these involve graphene oxide or not is to be determined. Initially, I thought that was crazy talk, but the unwillingness of the pharmaceutical companies to disclose their ingredients, which is just mind-boggling. I think it was Paraguay or Uruguay recently where this was raised in a court case. The governments, because of their contracts, and Pfizer in particular, but Moderna also, absolutely refuse to disclose what's in the tube. That's completely contrary to anything I've ever encountered in any teaching I've ever had about regulated products. There's something amiss here. There's no question.
Well, thank you for expanding on that. I'm wondering if you can comment on the new trivalent vaccine that just got recently approved for the fall.
Yeah. Okay.
And
So,
and how it's likely to radically increase the side effects. A good fact point, the observation of what's happening, though, is that the adoption rate of this will be radically diminished. I think we're down to under 30% of the people who are willing to take another jab now.
And I to expand on that, I'm encouraged that we're succeeding in alerting parents in particular. As you know, throughout this, the hill I've chosen to die on, we all like to toss that term around, has been in trying to stop mandates for children. And I'm sorry I haven't been more successful.
I think the adoption rate is under 20% for kids and maybe even under 10% in some communities. I mean, many parents are getting it.
I'm hearing for the boosters and for the little tiny ones, It's really been atrocious in terms of the uptake. So I do think we're getting through. So the trivalent story. This goes back to the logic of influenza vaccines. The European Medicines Agency has taken a different approach historically from the FDA and the CDC. In EMA, the annual influenza vaccines get a short initial trial because they are annually updated. Here in the States, there's been a decision that so long as you use the same manufacturing process, you can change, truly, you change the nature of the drug. And they have determined that for influenza, so long as you use the same manufacturing process, you can switch out the antigens expressed. So that would be akin to going from Wuhan 1 to BA.5 Ninja. You can switch these things out on an annual basis with the what in the United States is a quadrivalent influenza vaccine now, 2A strains and 2B strains, and that will be acceptable and requires no clinical trials for this historic vaccine product. And so reasoning by analogy, apparently, the FDA and the CDC have now concurred that a similar strategy shall be taken for these unlicensed experimental use authorized products that have produced a adverse event signal like no vaccine ever in history.
And we'll pause it right there and come back. I think we'll cut off the interview with Dr. Robert Malone by Dr. Joseph McCullough. You're listening to Liberation Station Radio Show. I'm Chris Steiner, and we'll be back here on the August 7th, 2022 edition for the second and final hour. Stay tuned.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.